Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 49 is out the gate.
Man, did we get some new intro music? Mr. Wally had my head nodding there, man.
Hey, you know, the crack production staff is on it here at S Express in the Tri-Cities of Washington, definitely cranking out the new tunes.
Man, turn down for what? And man, that seems to be the theme for the NBA and the NFL, Mr. Wally, if you know what I mean. I mean, there's some big things going on NBA-wise. We've got Woodson fired in New York. Talks of Steve Kerr coming in and reuniting with Phil Jackson. And, of course, in the NFL, man, some big news in the Pacific Northwest and Northern California. Man, one Terrell Pryor heading up to the PNW.
That's a head-scratcher to me. You've got Tavares Jackson. You've got Russell Wilson, of course, Super Bowl I quarterback in place. But on the other hand, Terrell Pryor is only 24 years old. He's a freak of an athlete, extremely fast. And if he can learn from anybody, who better than Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and hey, they can see what they have, and maybe down the road they can turn that into a good backup quarterback, or maybe even trade him for a higher draft pick to a team that needs a quarterback here.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a win-win all around. This is kind of, you know, this is one of those trades to where, you know, I think Seattle is actually paying Oakland back for the whole Matt Flynn trade a year prior, and between the management, of course, both management teams have Green Bay Packer ties. And I think this is one favor, Sean, to another as far as, hey, we made a mistake on Matt Flynn. Why don't we give you your draft pick back? Here's a seventh rounder. And why don't we take a chance on what you have? I think it's a win-win for Terrell Pryor. I think he gets a chance to leave what was a beleaguered program or organization in the Oakland Raiders. I know that Terrell has mentioned some things as far as wanting to start as a professional quarterback, but if you want to start, man, I believe that Seattle is the last place. Russell Wilson is cemented in there, but I think this is still a good thing for Terrell Pryor because this will allow him to learn from a savvy, headsy quarterback, one that doesn't get rattling, of course, has a Super Bowl ring under his belt.
And Russell Wilson hasn't really had any injury issues, and knock on wood, and hopefully that doesn't happen in Seattle, but you always have to have an insurance policy, a backup plan, and Tavares Jackson is that. But Tavares is on the wrong side of 30, and so maybe Pryor becomes an emergency quarterback at some point, and he's definitely going to be the third stringer, you would think, as long as he can be okay in this offense here in Seattle.
Yeah, from what I've been hearing, Sean, it's, you know, his progression, meaning Terrell Pryor's progression, is still one in the making. He's still getting better and better as the days go on. So I think this is a great move for Terrell because it builds his confidence. It gives him a chance to see where he fares against a team with quarterbacks that actually have a solid premise to it. And so we'll get a chance to see if Terrell can actually make himself, somewhat of a staple with an organization that has a solid foundation. They have a solid offensive line. They have a solid defense. They have solid everything all around. And Terrell has shown signs, or had shown signs last year with good protection in the pocket, that he could actually make the throws. And so, you know, again, I just don't see this as something to where it's going to be an antidote for him, meaning Terrell Pryor, that he will actually be a starter because this is Russell Wilson's team. But I think this will allow Terrell Pryor to become a better commodity, and who knows, maybe, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, he can find a team that will give him that chance to be a starting quarterback.
Now, Sean, let's keep football on the mind as finished out the NFL for the show here. Sticking with Oakland, our good friend of the show, Vic Tafer, with SFGate.com. He does not think that the Raiders will take Johnny Manziel with the fifth overall pick in the draft just over 2 weeks away. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think that, you know, Vic, you know, has a lot of accurate measures that he comes up with, and he does a lot of extensive research. And I have to agree with Vic on this one. This is something that just wouldn't behoove the Raiders to do as far as getting a Johnny Manziel. And here's the main reason why. Johnny Manziel wants to start right away. Johnny Manziel demands a big arena, and he demands, you know, that spectacle. When you have taken the time to get a Matt Schaub, and you know, you've actually said that, hey, this is going to be our guy for the next couple of years, and he's going to groom the next quarterback. Well, then what you're doing is you're shooting yourself in the foot as far as getting a Johnny Manziel. I think Johnny might have a great year. He's one of those 50-50 guys, depending on which team he goes to. If he has a, if he has a successful, or if he has a team that is actually really leaning on him to be successful, he could do just that if he has the proper line and the blocking in front of him. But if he has to run for his life, which he, you know, let's face it, as far as last year was concerned in Oakland, it seemed like, you know, it seems like he would have to run for his life. I don't think that that would be a good measure for Johnny Manziel.
Now, GM down there in Oakland, Reggie McKenzie, comes from Green Bay tutelage, just like John Schneider in Seattle. And thoughts are that McKenzie is going to take the aspect in the draft of take the best player available on the board, regardless of need, regardless of position. Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, you know, I think that he will definitely take Reggie McKenzie will definitely take the best player available. And, you know, it just depends on who that player is. I know that there are a lot of needs for the Oakland Raiders, one being a defensive line. And if you're talking about Jadeveon Clowney, if he's available, I think that he would be good. I believe that this Mac young man coming out will be he's an outside linebacker, is a strong staple as far as a best athlete as well. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, Reggie McKenzie has to think about is he has to think about what would be the best need for his team. And, you know, if you're, I would say go defense in the beginning and then try to solidify some things in the second, third, and round on the offensive end.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think there is not a surefire quarterback in this draft to take in the first round. So it might be wise to wait to the second or the third round if you think that guys might slide a little bit because there's not an Andrew Luck in this draft.
You know, I tend to agree on that. And because the reason being, Sean, is because, you know, a lot of times quarterbacks come at a high price. So whenever you draft a quarterback in the first round, it's not like drafting, you know, a tight end, a wide receiver, or any of the other skill positions for that matter. And, you know, you're going to spend a lot of money when you pick a quarterback. When you pick a first-round quarterback, that is the staple to your franchise. And so, you know, I don't see, you know, that type of a quarterback in this year's draft. And so, you know, it would be safe to, you know, to pick another position.
Let's get on out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines and welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, and that is Andrew Catalan, play-by-play man for CBS Sports, NBC, the Olympics. Andrew, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Andrew, thanks for taking the time out. And, man, you have had a busy schedule over the past year, and, you know, one of the things that you've done is, you know, gotten a chance to go to the Olympics in Sochi. And, you know, I want you to share a little bit about this because what you were covering was curling. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. This was my fourth Olympics with NBC and the second time I did curling. And it's a fun sport. Obviously, it doesn't have a lot of traction in non-Olympic years, although they're working on that, trying to get more people involved. But during the Olympics, it's really got a cult following, and I've really become a big fan of it, and Sochi was great. It was a great experience, and I know that curling was in the spotlight again, and it's great to see it for the sport because they're really trying so hard to get it to grow in the United States, and I think they're making ground, they're gaining ground. It's a process, but it's fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's an obscure sport, and so I remember the first time introduced to curling, it was, you know, when I was a young man and we first got cable. I remember watching the BBC channel, and they would show curling on there, and I thought, man, what an interesting sport. And here you are getting a chance to call curling. Kind of give us an idea on what it's like to actually come up with creative things and the thought process to say in curling.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was never a curler and I wasn't around it growing up. I'm from New Jersey originally, so I didn't really know too much about it. And then I started calling it, on the side as I tried to work on some play-by-play skills and kind of, you know, experience as many different things as possible. And then there became an opening for NBC to give me a tryout for an exhibition event that they had at Rockefeller Center. And the way they explained it to me was really resonated and still does, in the sense that the people at home probably don't know a lot of what's going on. And you probably, as the announcer and not knowing too much about it, don't know a lot about it as well. So any of the questions that go through your mind as you're watching this event, we want you to ask the analyst and try to bring out the information for the analyst. So from the analyst. So I kind of, you know, look at it as a way to have fun, but also as a way to educate, because I think the people that are watching are like you. They don't see it very often here and there. It's not something they're familiar with. So anytime there was something going on the ice, when I would be like, hey, what's going on? Instead of saying in my head, I wonder what they're doing, I would actually say that out loud. And I thought that was a way that more people can learn about the sport.
Andrew Ketelon, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And Andrew, in our profession, and when I say our profession, of course, Sean Wally and myself, we call games as well. And I'll never forget the first time that I was asked to call cross country. And, I had the chance to run cross country in high school and in college, but never had the chance to call it. It's a different mindset when you know that you have to ad lib and you have to, you know, actually paint a picture a little longer than expected. Is that something that you look forward to, or is that, you know, do you get the butterflies every single time, or does that just go away?
No, I mean, I think if you don't have a little bit of adrenaline and butterflies before any event that you do, there's something wrong with you. I mean, you don't want to be nervous, but at the same time, you want to have that energy that I think, you know, pushes you forward in anything that you do. And, you know, also you talk about cross country. I've done curling, luge, equestrian, handball. I mean, the list goes on of the sports that I've done. And that was all as a way in this business where, you know, you can't say no. You've got to experience and try as many different things as possible. It's the only way to get better, is to get those repetitions, is to do this as much as possible. And I think that's the message that when I have, you know, college students or interns or young professionals asking me, like, you know, how do you keep moving your way up the ladder? Well, you got to say yes to everything, and you're going to face some sports and some things that you don't know too much about. But that's, as you said, one of the ways you learn. You know, you have to ad lib your way through things. You have to kind of figure out on the fly what's going on, and that all kind of helps as you get the repetitions and move your way up.
Yeah, Andrew, those are great tidbits to go off, especially if we have some listeners that are looking to go into our profession. Now, of course, you've come, coming out of Syracuse University, again, I'd mentioned earlier, having such a big year coming out, spent 9.5 years with WNYT, and then, you know, now you're on the big stage. Of course, you've called some NCAA games for basketball. And, of course, you've also done the Masters as well. I mean, man, you know, what's going to be your staple moving forward?
Well, it's been a great ride, and I feel very fortunate for all the opportunities I've had. I think one of the things, you talk about messages to younger people, it's to treat people the way you want to be treated. And I think in any profession, not just, you know, broadcasting, but you know, I think that you have to really respect the people you work with. You have to develop relationships, and you have to be in the right place at the right time. So I think that throughout my career, I've been fortunate enough to experience and have all those things. And, you know, there's not one thing that I say I really want to do. I'm just enjoying the ride. I did some football, as you said, the NCAA tournament. And, you know, it's great. It's such a cutthroat, difficult, challenging profession. So any opportunities you get, you have to welcome, and you feel fortunate for them.
Andrew Catalan joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Andrew, what are your favorite memories or your top of the line moments in your broadcasting career?
Wow, that's a good one. Well, I think that calling the NCAA tournament was something that as a kid I grew up watching, like so many of us did, and you know, to have that chance to call some games, including a crazy game between Stephen F. Austin and VCU, was just awesome. I mean, it's something I'll definitely never forget. I had a chance at the 2010 Olympics to interview Wayne Gretzky, which, again, him sitting side by side with me as we're watching curling was phenomenal. And probably the number one for me thus far is 2012, I did the London Olympics, and I did tennis. And it was at Wimbledon, which was just incredible to be at Wimbledon and be in that center court bunker. And Roger Federer and Juan Martín Del Potro played a four-and-a-half-hour semifinal, which is the longest Olympic match in tennis. It was the longest tennis match in Olympic history. And to have that call and to be there at Wimbledon is something I'll never forget.
Back maybe 5-10 years ago, you're starting out your career. Who are people that you leaned on for some advice to help you in your career?
Yeah, it's definitely a great question. I think in this business especially, you need people that you can, you know, call and reach out and touch base on things. I think of even last month, you know, it was the first time calling the NCAA tournament, and I was really not nervous, but anxious in terms of how to attack the preparation. I mean, you think about it, the field comes out on Selection Sunday, and then on Thursday or Friday, you're calling games, and you have to call four games that first day, so that's eight teams that you have to learn in 2 or 3 days, and that's something you don't do very often. So I think back, as soon as I found out I was doing the tournament, my first phone call was to Ian Eagle, who's obviously done this many times before, who went to Syracuse, so I had a relationship with him through that. And you know, I spent a lot of time with him just trying to figure out, all right, when you find out that the eight teams that you're going to have in the tournament, what's your next move? Because it can certainly be overwhelming. And the way that he told me to approach it was, you can't think of it as the way you'd prepare for a game you just did. And as Sean knows, because we did a game, Arizona-Oregon, we did that game in March. You know, I had 4 days where I could go to Arizona practice because they got to Eugene early, and I went to Oregon shoot around. You know, there's things you can do when you have one game. But when you have eight teams in 2 days, you said you got to get the nuts and bolts down, and you kind of got to go backwards almost. You can't watch film of everybody. So it was really fascinating to lean on him, which I've done a few times in my career, and he's certainly one of the guys that I've looked up to the most over the last 5 to 10 years.
And you mentioned that game in Eugene. What are your thoughts on Matthew Knight Arena? I know your analyst, Doug Gottlieb, called it one of the nicest in the country. Do you agree?
Yeah, it was my first time in Eugene, let alone the arena, and I thought it was awesome. I mean, I had a great time there. I thought the arena was fantastic. Now, I heard a lot about the old court, and I know that was set up in a very intimidating way as well, but you know, we were right behind, and the students were right behind us, so they stormed the court. And just the way it was all set up, I was really impressed. I would love to go back there. I went to some, you know, great venues over the last couple of years, but I'd certainly rank that one right up there.
Andrew Catalan kind of left to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And Andrew, I, you know, one of the things as far as being a broadcaster is always that feeling of, you know, getting a strike, if you will, or perfect tens. And you've had the chance to actually come across some adversity. And of course, by no means do I want to go into major detail or anything like that. But, you know, there was a time in the NCAA tournament to where there was some strong adversity that you had to come across. You mentioned Ian Eagle as far as, you know, one of the mentors that you turn to, you know, kind of give us an idea on what it's like to actually make that change, that pivot, and move forward and still deliver greatness as you've done, you know, as a young analyst and broadcaster.
Yeah, well, obviously what you're referring to is the comment I made during the Gonzaga game, which was unfortunate. It was a completely honest mistake, and I apologized right away and learned a lot from that. But, you know, I had to, you know, the games went on. We had two more games to go that night, and I knew I had to refocus and, you know, just do what I was there to do, and that was to do my job, and I did it to the best of my ability. And, you know, thankfully, we were all able to move on from that. And, you know, you learn a lot about, you know, yourself and others in times like that. And you know, thankfully, it's, you know, everyone can hopefully realize it was a mistake, and we move forward.
Now, Andrew, with all the sports that you've done thus far, is there a favorite that or lead sport that you like up to this point, or are you still just kind of, you know, feeling your way a little bit?
Yeah, you know, NFL is certainly something I always grew up watching with my family and love going to games, and anytime I get a chance to do those games, it's a huge thrill. I'm also a big Dolphin tennis fan, but, you know, anything. I love doing it. Right now I'm preparing for a college baseball game I have next week. I'll be doing some arena football over the next couple of months. So, you know, anytime you get to you go to a game, you feel that adrenaline that we talked about earlier in the interview, and it's exciting. So no matter what it is, I just look forward to it.
Andrew, you're kind of into it. What is your schedule like? Obviously, the NCAA tournament takes up a couple of weeks. You just came back from the Masters, had a great time down there. But now it would appear there's a bit of a lull in between major sports, but now you're talking about college baseball and some other things. So what is a typical week for you this time of year?
Yeah, so I just kind of finished my busy season, if you will, with 9 days at the Masters. And now, from now until, you know, probably until about football rolls around, it'll be a steady diet of arena football every Saturday night on CBS Sports Network. And then once you know, the NFL and college football season rolls around again, I'll get a better idea of my schedule for the fall. But, you know, once football starts right through basketball, it's pretty much nonstop. And then these are the months where, at least for me right now in my career, where I can, you know, catch my breath a little bit and just do one game a week as opposed to a couple of games a week. And also my wife and I have our first child due in a couple months, so I think life's going to change drastically when the child comes into the world, but we can't wait. We're excited, so we're getting prepared for that. So there's a lot going on. Even though I won't be traveling multiple times a week, there's still a lot to do.
Well, congratulations on the new addition to the family in the summer months. And what are your thoughts on Augusta National without Tiger Woods?
Yeah, well, Augusta is just one of my favorite weeks of the year. It's just an amazing place to go to, and obviously it was unfortunate that Tiger Woods was not able to be there this year, and Phil Mickelson didn't make the cut, so you didn't have either one of them on the weekend at the Masters for the first time in 20 years. And, you know, I thought it was going to be an opportunity for a guy like Jordan Spieth, who obviously got a lot of attention last week but couldn't get it done on Sunday, or even a Matt Kuchar, who, you know, has come close in several tournaments this year, finally won over the weekend, but at the same time thought he might make a push on Sunday. And it was Bubba Watson in the end who got it done again at Augusta National. So, you know, obviously I think that, and even you've heard the golfers say it, they would rather that Tiger is in the field. They want the buzz and the vibe that he brings. And I think everyone in golf just hopes that Tiger can get back healthy soon. And you know, obviously, the U.S. Open's coming up at Pinehurst in June, so that'll be the next major, and we'll see how it shakes out. But I think in the golf world, you got some excitement now with this Jordan Spieth and some other young Americans who are poised to try to make a run and get some major titles under their belts.
Andrew Catalan, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And Andrew, I happen to agree with you. Jordan Spieth, I mean, that was one of those feel-good stories. And, of course, he double bogeyed, I believe, on 12 and 13 that just basically put him out. And Bubba Watson, you know, moving forward, winning his second green jacket. Just one quick question. I mean, do you think that, you know, with the Jordan Spieths that come out, and of course Rory McIlroy, just a couple of years ago, we were doing the same thing. We're always trying to push a young player to the forefront to actually battle against Tiger Woods. Is that something that is good for the game of golf, or is it just something that we're just kind of having wishful thinking that somebody's going to come up and challenge?
No, I think it's both. I mean, I think that, you know, it's good to see that some of these young guys can hold them. You know, I followed Spieth very closely in Saturday's round, and I was very impressed with his composure. I mean, that's certainly one of the times, and definitely the course, that, you know, you can get a little nervous and you can lose your way. But he kind of held it together, and I know it didn't come together all the way for him on Sunday, but I still think that he's going to be a player. And, you know, you think about tennis, you want rivalries. That, I think that's, you know, back in the 90s, you had so many great rivalries, and I don't think you have as many of those rivalries in tennis anymore. But I think those are things that help grow the popularity of the sport. And that's why I think that Tiger is good for the game, but that there's new guys that could develop rivalries, and only time will tell what those rivalries are and who they'll be. But, you know, you need the personalities, and you see where it shakes out.
Andrew Catalan, thank you so much for your time and your insight tonight. Lots of great insight and stories. Appreciate having you on. Thanks for your efforts, and it was great working with you down in Eugene at the University of Oregon.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Thanks, guys, for having me on, and good luck to you guys. Hope you continue to shine, and wish you all the best.
Hey, thanks, Andrew, and we wish you all the best as well, man, and you know, a young and upcoming talent such as yourself. We're pulling for you, so keep up. Keep it up.
I appreciate that. We'll see you down the road.
All right.
There goes Andrew Catalan. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Catalan, play-by-play for CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network, as well as did some NBC work for the Olympics.
You know, that was some great insight, Sean, from Andrew. I mean, you know, you talk about somebody that is doing a lot in getting himself, you know, into the forefront, of course, leaving WNYT and spending about 10 years there, you know, going in, you know, doing his third Olympics, he said, along with, you know, he's done some tennis and golf and basketball, you name it. So, man, what a great, great interview. So we're coming right back. We're going to take a quick break, so keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger.
Andro 400 is the natural, safe, and effective way to lose weight, gain energy, increase testosterone, and feel young again. Too good to be true? Then listen to what Bob and Jim have to say.
And in 30 days, I lost approximately 10 pounds. After another 30 days, I lost another 8 pounds, so a total of 18 pounds lost in 60 days. My libido has been increased 100-fold, and I feel like a teenager again.
I've been taking Andro 400 for about a year now. I've lost a little over 30 pounds. I have more energy. The biggest thing is just feeling better about myself, a lot more confident.
Guys, it's time to discover what Andro 400 can do for you. Call 888-400-0435. That's 888-400-0435. Or go to andro400.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world.
Welcome Welcome back to On the Double, the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd as we roll on with show 49.
Yeah, this is a great show starting out. And, of course, we had Andrew Catalan on. And, you know, he's done some things with CBS, NCAA. Basketball, men's basketball, women's basketball, as a matter of fact. I didn't get a chance to talk with him about that. He's called some UConn games as well. But has also done some things with the Masters. And yeah, it was good talking with him, Sean.
I can only imagine what kind of, not only the schedule, but just to think of all the places he's been able to travel around the world with broadcasting. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, these are things that you can only dream of, you know, as far as getting to see all the different spectacles. Did he say he was at the Davis Cup, or he was doing some things with the Davis Cup as well? I mean, you're talking about a bunch of sports, man. It was exciting talking to him.
Well, let's waste no time and get right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two, and that is Jason Thompson, the Sacramento King forward center. Jason, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Jason, thanks for taking the time out, man. This was, you know, one of those seasons once again. Of course, Coach Malone coming in, you know, bringing in some fervor and some excitement this year. You know, it's been a tough year for Sacramento, but at the same time, there are some bright spots moving ahead. Of course, we have an arena that is moving forward, and I believe they're going through the final stages of getting that started. And of course, you know, just a bright future with young players. You know, kind of give us a little bit of an insight on how the season went for you.
It was frustrating to say the least. How the team was. You know, we had a lot of talent. You know, a lot of young guys. But I felt like if we played more of a team and not as individuals, I feel like we could definitely would have shown more of our potential. But that's kind of the peaks and valleys you go through with a young team and a lot of new guys coming in. So, you know, if there's more veteran guys and more stability, then you can have more success.
You know, it's great that you mentioned that, Jason, because I look at you as being one of the staples, especially amongst the bigs. I mean, this is your you come into the league 2008, and you know, you're 27 years of age. You seem to be that catalyst, that person, that glue that keeps the team together. Of course, DeMarcus Cousins is there with you, but you know, again, we're looking at some stability, and I believe that you bring that to the Sacramento Kings.
Well, I mean, it's one thing that I try to do. I mean, I've been the ultimate professional. You know, coming in, you know, with a mindset of just trying to do the little things, bring energy, you know, into my first year. And then I was, you know, getting double-doubles mostly every night. You know, then I ended up averaging 11 and 8 my rookie year. You know, my expectations were to just keep, you know, building on from there. But then, you know, with having a different coach every year, having in my 6 years, having 5 different coaches, over 85 new players, new ownership, you know, new GM, and the list goes on. I mean, for me to be in my 6th year and be the longest tenure king, I would have never, imagined that in 2008. So it's definitely been a tough road.
Wow. Now, wait a minute. Now, did I just hear you say 85 different players since you've been with the Kings?
Yeah, over 80, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And so moving forward, of course, we have Vivek Ranadive, the new owner of the Sacramento Kings. It just seems like there's a lot of brightness moving forward. Of course, you have Kevin Johnson doing some great things with the city and revitalizing that energy. I mean, if you were to put a timeline on it, I know that you wanted to win like yesterday, but is this something that the Sacramento Kings fans can look forward to here in the next year, a drastic improvement?
I definitely think for sure that the future is bright. Vivek has put us in a great situation, obviously the mayor as well, like you mentioned. Getting, you know, a new arena and giving the fans that they deserve, you know, and giving the city that it deserves. You know, I think that, you know, they're going to have that type of LA Live where it's going to really open up the city, really attract people from not just coming to games, but just coming to the city as well. And it's going to be the, one of the, you know, the most beautiful and biggest, you know, indoor-out arenas, you know, in the world. So definitely, it's definitely a bright spot, and the young talent as well, too. You just got to kind of just put it in together and, you know, become more of a team.
Jason Thompson with us from the Sacramento Kings. And Jason, back to middle of 2000, right before summer hits, the NBA draft, your 12th pick overall. What are your thoughts right before and the eve of the draft? What's going through your mind?
Well, I took a different route than other people. You know, I went a small guy out of Rider University. You know, I started becoming an NBA prospect in my last 2 years. You know, I had grown 9 inches in high school. I grew 4 inches in college. I just blossomed and started getting better. Gained 50 pounds, in college as well. So I was just, you know, just kept maturing, kept getting stronger, kept getting better. Had the shooting three ability, and just kept, being on the eyes of NBA teams. And then I did about 20 plus workouts, and coming up to the draft, you know, I went from being from the beginning of my senior year to, a beginning second round pick to being in the lottery from the day of the draft. It was from 12 to 30. And I knew Sac was very interested. I knew that if I was going to get picked up by Sac, that Golden State was going to take me at 14. So, it was just a lot of hard work. I kind of had to take a different route, but it all paid off. And that's the definition of hard work paying off.
And you've talked about the change in ownership last year. So you got a season under your belt with that new ownership group. Was there a total different feel to the team? Was there a better aura here in this past season?
Well, you can definitely tell that, it's one less thing you had to worry about, when it came to, the media asking us, are we going to be staying? Do you want to stay? This, that, and the third. It definitely was monkey off our back with that, and there's one less thing that the fans have to worry about. You know, it's tough to put money and invest in a team when you know you're unsure if they're going to be back next season. So that last game of the season always was tough because there was a lot of emotion of it being the last game forever, which was unfair to the city and to the fans. So things have definitely changed. It's been a lot of excitement with ticket sales and season ticket holders and things like that, and it can only get better with the new arena.
Jason Thompson, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And let's rewind a little bit, Jason, as we're talking about that transition to ownership, kind of walk us through how, the feeling of the team. Was there a little bit of dissension, when the team, when it seemed like the team was going to move to Virginia Beach, or when it seemed like it was going to move to Los Angeles, and then finally Seattle? I know there were a couple of players on the team, one being Isaiah Thomas from the Pacific Northwest, and then, of course, Spencer Haas from that area as well, who's now with the Philadelphia 76ers. I believe he's with the Philadelphia 76ers. What was it like as a team? Was the locker room divided? Were you guys together saying, hey, let's just go out here and play basketball? Or, kind of give us an idea on what that was like.
Well, it's, interesting for them just because, they grew up obviously as Supersonic fans, and they were successful with Sean Kemp and Gary Payton and all those guys too. So I could kind of understand how they want a team. I don't think that they wanted, Sacramento to be that team and for them to leave the city to go there. But they eventually, want a team. But they were very professional about it. They didn't care about those type of things. Obviously, they want a team in the long run, but they didn't want it to come from here, maybe an expansion team or something like that. So they never made that as a distraction. It's tougher when you're from that area because people are going to ask you so many questions there. But those guys never mentioned it at all. And, we were just out there controlling what we could control. We couldn't control for us our team leaving. All we could control was in between those lines. The baseline and the sideline on the court.
And Jason, yeah, it definitely seemed like, you know, when you're on the court, you're one of those leaders that is very emotional, very outgoing, and sometimes you get a bum rap for that. It comes across as complaining. I see it as just a strong passion to get better. And, you know, I mean, it looks like your game is getting better game in and game out. Where do you see yourself as far as your role in the team? I mean, does it matter to you as far as starting is concerned, or are you comfortable with being a role player?
Well, people don't understand, you know, with emotions of the game. You know, people that maybe call in and try to react to certain things really don't know the game, you know, like that. That emotion is something that it means that you care. And, you know, if you are fond of your craft, that you want to make sure that you're you know, you're good with it. And the more passion you do, that means that you care about wins and losses. If you just, you know, if you're in foul trouble or someone is, you know, scoring on a person or something like that and you don't react, that means that you should think that the person doesn't care. So for people that like that, they don't understand the game at all. But that's on them. That's why we're playing it and then they're watching it, to answer that question. And for the other, I mean, you know, for me, you know, I know I'm a starter in this league. You know, not sure if it's going to be for this team. You know, I just know over the years, you know, playing the fourth spot has been a tough situation just because, you know, over the past years, you know, I've been the starter and I come off the bench at times and it hasn't worked. Anywhere, I mean, other than, you know, myself being successful at times, I mean, anyone else that's coming in here, I'm still the last one standing. So if you can find a way to make that position any better, then you can let me know. But, you know, ever since, you know, Cuz has been the five, you know, the four, you know, it's been a tough situation for any guy. I can go down the list of the 85 players that were power forwards that try to make them there at that spot, and I'm still here. So that's to let you know on that.
And definitely, Jason, I mean, as I mentioned before, you have a strong passion for the game. Now, as we're going through the interview here, and of course we have monitors here at our stations, you know, I'm keeping one eye on the computer monitor and one eye on the television. And of course, if you've seen what I've seen, Kendrick Perkins just ties the game.
Oh, you know, wow.
As Oklahoma City ties the game going in, at the end of regulation, going into overtime, do you watch a lot of postseason basketball, or is it just something that where you just go to the drawing board and you just say, hey, this is the off season, this is where I'm going to better my game, and I'm not going to worry about those types of things?
No, I love to watch the game. I love to watch it every level. I watch every playoff game. The only reason why I'm not watching it now is because you know, I was doing an event at one of my sponsors for my camp, JT Elite Basketball Camp, which is June 30th to July 3rd, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., where I'm hosting for kids. I have it for 2 weeks. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not watching it, just because I'm promoting for that. You know, last year we had 500 kids, and, you know, it's going to be even greater this year, too. But, you know, for the playoff stakes, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, and I do get frustrated at times that I've never been in the playoffs yet. You know, it is frustrating to be watching it at this time. But I feel like it's a learning experience. Just knowing what teams are in it and what it takes for those teams to be successful.
Now, Jason, you mentioned your basketball camp, JT Elite Basketball Camp. You've got that coming up here soon. Now, it's the way for you to give back to the kids, teach the kids, and you do a lot of things with them, from conditioning to basketball drills and also leadership.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel like, you know, it's co-ed. It's from first graders to 12th graders, and it's not like we're just giving them a basketball and letting them hoop and all that type of stuff. You know, we do teach them, you know, fundamentals. You know, we teach them to be, you know, a respectable man and woman on and off the court. You know, make sure that, you know, we prepare them for college as well, being student athletes, to make sure they're doing well in class. We also provide healthy lunches, Hum Fresh, which is a healthy company that does food for school systems. And, you know, it's not like they're eating pizza or wings and stuff. We provide chicken Caesar wraps, you know, grilled fajitas, chipotle, salads, fruit, and the list goes on of just healthy things. So they don't bring a lunch. We provide it for them. And we're sponsored by Body Armor as well. We have water. And, you know, the kids just really have a good time.
Now, that's a great thing you're doing in the community, and that is going to be at the Hardwood Palace in Rockland. And that's amazing that you're providing the lunches, and you're doing it in a way to show the kids and teach the kids about nutrition. And you don't have to have the burgers, the hot dogs, the pizzas. There's another alternative. And if you want to excel in academics, in sports, you got to get your mind and your body right. And that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's one thing of, and another thing too, you know, I know a lot of people go to, you know, name player camps and they're only there, you know, for a couple hours or so a day. You know, for me, I get to, like to be interactive with the kids, make sure the counselors are on their P's and Q's, and, you know, I'm you know, partaking the drills with the kids and, you know, letting them know the ins and outs. You know, we also have good guest speakers, you know, from NBA players to, you know, other professional athletes in other sports, and just trying to make these kids, you know, student athletes and entrepreneurs in their craft. And if God forbid something happens to them, you know, they have something to fall back to. And we're just trying to be the best informative people to help them out.
Jason Thompson, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And of course, Jason, you know, these are right along the lines on what we talk about on our show and then making sure that the word gets out with, you know, our friends and who are professional athletes that, you know, are doing things in the off season, not just for themselves to get to make themselves better, but to help the community. And you definitely do that, man. And you know, there are a lot of coaches that, you know, that are a part of the JT Elite that I know in this area. And of course you do some things in New Jersey, your home state as well. And so I believe the JT Elite is over there also.
Well, I have my AU team, JT Elite Yellow Jackets. Also, trying to combine that to my college at Rider University. You know, they've had, you know, Rider camps, and I've just been a sponsor and stuff like that. But we're trying to, you know, change that up and make it into a, you know, a bag in a JT Elite camp. So, you know, that's definitely in the works as we speak. And, yeah, I'm not just trying to make it in, you know, the city that I played for over 6 years, trying to do it also where the areas where I grew up in and give back to those kids as well.
Now, is this something because you, I mean, basically it was something that helped you get to the next level growing up as far as AAU is concerned? Is that why there's so much energy, so much effort put into this?
Well, I think for sure. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you play against, you know, people in your backyard and things like that, but to play against people, you know, in the state, on nearby states and in the country, it makes you, it shows you, you know, where you could be at that certain level. So for me, it was very important of playing against different competition and just seeing what type of level and what type of player I could be, you know, at that point in time. So it's definitely important, something that I've experienced. And, you know, I always try to give as much feedback to the kids as well, because, you know, there might be a kid that's dominating, you know, in his high school and in that area. But, you know, you put some other kids, you know, in the state against them, and then he might learn a little something. And then he has, you know, some things to work on to make him a better player.
Now, you'd mentioned earlier, Jason, that you have some of some current NFL, NBA players that come to the camp. Can you kind of give us a hint on a few of the names that come into your camp?
Well, last year I had Bobby Jackson, obviously former King, you know, assistant coach of Minnesota. I had Ruthie, Fulton, that used to play for the Monarchs in the Olympic gold medalist. You know, I had Marcus Thornton, former King, come out. And, you know, I just, this goes on. Then I had some professionals that play overseas. So I just don't try and teach the kids or just show the kids, you know, the typical – you know, sometimes just NBA players, sometimes I want to teach them another story because, you know, it is a small percentage of the people that, you know, that get to the NBA. So, you know, that some kids want to learn the routes of, you know, the woman wants to know how, you know, the woman professional athlete did. And the man wants to know, okay, if I can't make the NBA, how is the professional life? So we kind of switch it up. We have some entrepreneurs, people that used to play and got injured and then did made their own companies. So, you know, the list goes on from the different type of people.
If you'd like to get your kid involved in the 2014 JT Elite basketball camps, you can do so at jtelitecamp.com. And you want to do that before June 15th, and you will save $20, $180 if you enroll before June 15th. Spend a good part of a week with Jason Thompson and a bunch of his good buddies. Jason, when you were growing up and playing basketball and things were going great in high school and on into college and now the pros, who were some guys that you looked up to when you were an aspiring athlete?
Well, it's crazy to think. I mean, obviously, you know, I felt like everybody was a, you know, Michael Jordan fan. But, you know, part of the people that I liked, I didn't get to watch too much as a kid, obviously, was Will Chamberlain. You know, a guy just dominated his position, scoring 100 points in the game. you know, I looked at, you know, some of the tapes that he did. But the game, obviously, was a little bit different. But I was a big Tim Duncan fan growing up. You know, even when I was younger, I wasn't a power forward. You know, but I still just a guy that, you know, he wasn't obviously always the flashiest guy, but he just knew how to get the job done. Still to this day, he's still doing it. Go figure that, you know, Chris Webber was one as well. Just how dominant he was, you know, high school to college and also very productive in the NBA as well, too. So there's definitely guys, you know, and that were big men, you know, that were definitely, you know, masters at their craft.
Well, Jason, definitely appreciate having you on the show here on The Double. Wish you tremendous success moving forward. And of course, you know, me living in the Sacramento area, love the things that you do with JT Elite. Continue to do these great things, man, and we look forward to following you in the future.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys for having me.
Thanks for your time, Jason Thompson, Sacramento Kings forward center. An awesome interview and great things going with Jason Thompson and his elite basketball camps.
Man, you know, it's incredible. You know, Jason's doing some awesome things in, you know, in the community and, of course, not just on the West Coast but on the East Coast. You know, you like to hear those things and, you know, just wishing Jason continued success and hope that things can turn around here in Sacramento so that there can be a winning franchise here. And as you can hear in Jason's voice, that's something that he wants to do. And I'm looking forward to seeing that in the near future.
We got one more segment left. Keep it right here. When we return, we'll stay with the NBA and talk about the Milwaukee Bucks that were for sale. Right after this, you're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. It's been a fabulous show, number 49. Man, Mr. Boyd, we are almost to 1 year.
Man, half a century as far as the shows are concerned. We're looking at number 50 next week. I'm looking forward to that, man. And of course, before we can get to 50, we have to talk about today's guests, Andrew Catalan and Jason Thompson. Man, what a treat today, Sean Wally.
And it's great. We've already got Andrew Catalan on Twitter, at Andrew Catalan, thanking us and wishing us the best of luck in the future. And, you know, one of our sponsors, Your Papa John's, just favoriting and retweeting our tweets about the show. So a lot of love going around for On the Double.
Yeah, you know, this is a great time of the year. You're looking at, you know, the playoffs, the NBA playoffs that are underway. And, of course, Jason taking the time to actually talk with us. And, of course, he's doing some great things with the youth, with JT Elite. And you always like to hear those cool things, Sean, you know, as far as the, you know, the professional players, the athletes giving back and, you know, giving their expertise on what it took to get to the next level. And, you know, Jason's just one of those guys, you know, that is, you know, trying to better the community.
And sticking with the NBA, you mentioned the playoffs, a lot of good round one first games under the belt. And in the Northwest, the Portland Trailblazers somehow come away with a 122-120 win in overtime down in Houston. LaMarcus Aldridge going off, 46 points in the overtime victory. He fouls out with about a minute left in overtime, tells Damian Lillard to take it over, and the rest is history.
Yeah, you know, DeMarcus Aldridge is one of those players that, you know, he lives for these types of moments. And 46 points, you know, that I think this is just a precursor of things to come for him as a post player and as an NBA star. But when you talk about Damian Lillard, you talk about somebody that has a tremendous upside and just has no fear. Of course, the three-point shot that he took to tie it at the end of regulation was just incredible last night. Of course, the Portland Trail Blazers are one of those teams that this isn't supposed to happen. They're supposed to get, you know, beat up a little bit by the Houston Rockets. Now, Sean, I have to admit that last night's game was, you know, wasn't without controversy. This was something that, you know, we're going to see as the playoffs go on, as far as the instant replay is concerned, as far as the officiating is concerned. You know, I mean, man, I don't know what to say. I think Houston, you know, at one part of me says, hey, a loss is a loss. But the other side says, gosh, they kind of got taken a little bit last night.
Well, that seems to be the case in a couple of games, including one down in your neck of the woods where the Golden State Warriors also get a road win, taking out the Clippers down in Los Angeles, 109-105, where Blake Griffin was in foul trouble, only played 19 minutes. But controversy all around with the officiating. It's playoff time. They should be on their A-plus game, and it's not happening.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Blake Griffin being in foul trouble. Of course, Andre Iguodala in foul trouble. You know, I just think the officials are missing the point here that, you know, we're watching these games and the ratings go up to actually see basketball being played. And, of course, the NBA admitting today, Sean Wally, that, you know, there was a play where Chris Paul was being guarded by Draymond Green where they should have called the foul. And I think that was pivotal. I mean, the game was tied at the time, and this would have put the Clippers ahead and probably sealed the game for them. And, you know, I don't know how to take that, Sean. I don't know how to take the fact that the NBA comes back in hindsight and says, well, you know, hey, we made a mistake. It's not like they can overturn the game. You know, for me, I'm excited because the Golden State Warriors won. But, you know, this officiating is, you know, questionable at best.
Yeah, and the same thing happens in every sport when the leagues come out and say, oops, our guys made a mistake. Well, okay, they admit they got it wrong, but like you mentioned, they're not going to rewind. They're not going to replay it. They're not going to start over at that exact moment and give them foul shots or get another pitch or redo third down. So it's just amazing that, why even admit it? Because you're not going to solve it. You're not going to fix it, at least in terms of that game and that play.
Yeah, you know, until the leagues figure this out, because I just noticed that the NBA is starting to do the same thing that the NFL is doing as far as, you know, bringing one of the retired officials. He's one of the head officials, the chief of play calling or you know, penalties or whatever it is. And they get on the television and they overturn a call. And it's just sickening to me because I'm thinking, man, what in the world? You know, what good does that do now as a fan? What good does that do, you know, as far as the outcome of the game to admit that you're wrong unless you're going to change it? And so, you know, moving forward, I hope that that's something that, you know, both leagues are looking to do. And now you have Major League Baseball that's actually brought in instant replay. And I'm still learning this one, Sean. I mean, you know, as far as calls at the plate, you know, there's a certain protocol and you can't argue balls and strikes. And, you know, it's, you know, I think that there's a place for instant replay. But, you know, right now I'm just trying to find out postseason wise why there's such a huge problem, especially watching the NBA games now, why there's such a huge problem in actually getting the plays called right.
It seems like in the beginning, the officials in the NBA playoffs want to keep things very tight and not let things get out of hand, but then turn it around to the fourth quarter or even overtime, then they're not calling that either close foul, ticky-tack foul, or even a blatant foul. So they need to all get on the same page and figure it out.
Yeah, you're definitely right, Sean. You know, they can't call the ticky-tack foul or they can't call the blatant foul. But what they can call is they can call the technical. And this is the problem that I have, especially watching NBA basketball, because it looks like the official is looking for a reason to call a technical. Last I checked, if you're putting your blood, sweat, and tears on the line as far as to win a world championship, a Super Bowl, or a World Series, that there has to be some bit of emotion involved. And for the officials in NBA to actually look at an athlete or a player and to see if they draw any type of emotion to where they can call a technical, I just believe is out and out wrong. And I saw that a couple of times. I saw that with Beverly last night with the Houston Rockets. And I just thought that, man, what a travesty that we've come to a point to where fans are actually paying, you know, for the cheap seats, maybe $100 for a ticket, all the way down to the front where they can be as high as some 15, 20,000, depending on where you are in Los Angeles or New York, for a seat to actually have an official be the person to dictate the outcome of a game. It is just an out and out travesty. I don't get it, Sean. I just don't.
And that's one thing umpires and officials don't want. They don't want the spotlight on them. They've done a good job when they're not talked about, when they're not known, when they aren't even noticed.
Now, are you sure? Because I'm not so sure now that these officials aren't looking for the spotlight, because the way things are going, especially in the first rounds here of the NBA playoffs, it looks like they're looking for a little bit of the limelight. And, you know, it seems like the officials aren't called for the mistakes that they make. So if a player makes a mistake or if a player has a discretion, they're fined, you know, or they're fouled out of the game. There's no repercussion for an official to actually make a mistake. Now, I know that we've had questions on this before on the show, and, you know, the outcome for an official is to actually call the best game that he or she possibly can, so that they can actually call a Super Bowl or a World Series or an NBA championship. But it just seems like there is no repercussion for an official or a referee or an umpire when they actually make a mistake.
Well, I think there is, because with any job, you get graded, you get some type of performance appraisal. Now, what that is in those leagues, MLB, NBA, NCAA, we don't know because we're not there and we're not those officials. But, you know, we have heard and known about various officiating crews that have been split up because they've started, you know, missing calls or making the wrong calls, and guys have been downgraded or not make the playoff because they've got too many questionable calls. So there are repercussions. And it's just a matter of,
you know, maybe the pool is too large. There's too many fish in the pool for the NBA to pick from, and maybe they're not making the right calls of who we should have officiating these games, or maybe there's too much going on in the personal life of this guy, and they're not thinking clearly and zoned in on the game and the play at hand.
Well, whatever the situation may be, you know, they have to fix it, and they have to fix it fast, because it's just becoming disheartening to when you put, you know, all that energy as a player, as a fan, you know, coaching, ownership, the whole nine, to have the officials, you know, dictate the outcome of, you know, a contest.
And there is two games going on right now in the NBA playoffs, and I have to say, when I saw the score in Oklahoma City in overtime, I did crack a little bit of a smile as Memphis takes a 2-point lead with 26 seconds to go, 107-105. That is according to CBSSports.com. I know, Mr. Boyd, you're probably watching it live, so let me know if that's any different.
No, that's accurate. And so Memphis has the ball with about 19 seconds to go. And so they'll walk the length of the floor. Russell Westbrook actually makes a foul, and looks like Memphis has a chance to seal the deal. Of course, the other game you're talking about, the Clippers and the Warriors. The Clippers have jumped out to a 25-18 lead in the first quarter, minute 42 left in the first quarter of that contest. Of course, the Warriors looking to go up 2-0 and bring it back to Oakland. And possibly close that out. But, of course, they would have to take care of business today before that could even happen.
What are your thoughts on seven-game series in the first round?
I actually think that it's kind of a medal, if you will, for both teams. I know that it used to be the best of five. And, it just seemed a little weak to me. It seemed like the best teams would just come out and put their best foot forward in the first two games and set precedents, and depending on if it's the four against the five, that that series would go the full five games. I think this is a little bit more of the fortitude of a ball club. Are you going to go out there and are you going to win four games to move to the next series? And so yeah, I think it's good. I like it. I like the seven game series.
I'm going to disagree on a couple reasons. Number one, tell me what month we're in right now.
Yeah, it's a long way to June.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The champion's not crowned until June. So right. It's more than a month of playoff basketball when you've got day off here, 2 days off here, two more days off here. It's like seven games in the first round is something I have never gotten used to, and it should go back to five, and if you're really the better team, you'll find a way to win three out of five.
Yeah, but if you're the better team, you'll find a way to win four out of seven. And when does the fan get to win in this whole deal? In that, oh, my goodness. Oh, okay, so there's a foul called here. Okay, so Memphis took the ball out of bounds, and Russell Westbrook fouled. So, okay, we're still good. But getting back to what I was saying, when does the fan get to win in this? I mean, if you have a best of seven series, and that just means, more money, more revenue, and that's what the NBA is all about, is more money, more revenue. You get to see more games. And, I've got a buddy of mine out here in the Elk Grove area. Of course he lives out here, but what he did a few years ago is he purchased tickets to season tickets for the Boston Celtics. Now, this is when KG and Pierce and Ray Allen were there, and he purchased season tickets. And, as Boston, moved on in the playoffs and he wasn't there, he was selling the tickets. And so, he started to create a tremendous income for himself and selling these tickets all year long. Now, Boston at that time went seven games, I think, in every series. And so I think that benefits the fan, more monetarily than anything.
So you're saying it benefits the entrepreneur who has the wherewithal and the means to purchase not only season tickets, but playoff tickets and turn those in to gold.
Man, that, I think that didn't come out right. I think that's more capitalism at its best, man. I mean, but yes, I think that the best of seven series should be put in place so that people can make more money, if that makes sense.
Wow. Oh my goodness, Sean Boyd on the mic tonight. It might be improv night in Elk Grove, in the Elk Grove DSX studios.
I am not against people making money for themselves. Stop it.
Well, wrapping up our NBA talk, we have to send a shout out, a fond farewell to a guy that has touched all parts of our show, from the Northwest in Portland down to Sacramento, even the Golden State Warriors. And I'm talking about current Minnesota Timberwolves coach Rick Adelman is going to retire and hang it up after 23 years of coaching in the NBA. He has coached for the Sacramento Kings, the Golden State Warriors, the Portland Trail Blazers, and the aforementioned Timberwolves. He is eighth all-time in coaching victories.
Yeah, you talk about a consummate professional in every means of coaching, and that's Rick Adelman. And, you know, he's one of the... I can imagine, you know, on our show and then on sports radio, especially in Northern California, that's going to be the talk here, you know, as Rick Adelman retires, that, man, what about bringing Rick Adelman back? And Vivek, can you offer enough money to bring him back? Because that was the last time that the Sacramento Kings had, you know, glory days. And that was around the 2002, you know, and everywhere he's gone, he has, you know, developed some great teams. And so, you know, hats off to Coach Adelman in his retirement. And, you know, just expect some phone calls from Sacramento as far as bringing you back.
One more item down there in the Bay, the San Francisco 49ers. Tim Kawakami of the San Jose Mercury News. He does not think that Aldon Smith will play another down for the 49ers.
You know, and I don't think so either. I think this is, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that the front office has offered Aldon Smith more than enough to better himself, and it's just not happening. And so, the biggest thing, of course, when you're dealing with the off-season issues with Aldon Smith, you're talking about, you know, overcoming, you know, alcoholism. And, you know, it looked like he was on the right path. And, of course, he came back at the end of last season and played very good going into the NFC Championship game before losing to the Seattle Seahawks. And then this happens here recently as far as, you know, being in the airport. And it sounds like, you know, alcoholism was involved again. And he mentions that he has a bomb, you know, just because he doesn't want to be patted down and checked. I think that this was enough for San Francisco, and again, the Yorks, it remains, you know, in their court as far as what they want to do. But I believe that, again, that this is, you know, the last time that we'll see Aldon Smith in San Francisco 49er uniform.
And on the one hand, it's a shame because he's one of the best linebackers in the game.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he can play linebacker, he can play defensive end, he can put his hand down in the sand. You know, and I believe that if he can get things right, the NFL will allow him that chance because that's what the NFL does. You know, but I just think that, you know, his time has worn out in San Francisco, which is sad, Sean. It is. It's really sad.
And then up here in the Northwest, a little bit of Seahawk news. Sidney Rice returning to the Seahawks at a $1 million base salary and an additional $15,625 per week bonus if he is on the active roster, and that saves the Seattle Seahawks about $7 million in cap space from his old contract that they terminated about a month and a half ago.
Which is a great bonus for Seattle, Sean, because, you know, it seemed like receivers were leaving Seattle to go and play at other teams. Of course, Golden Tate being one of them, Seattle had to solidify and make sure that they were strengthening their receiver core, and they did just that with Sidney Rice. And, of course, we had talked earlier about Terrell Pryor. And so, you know, Seattle's done a good job in that area as far as filling some of the holes that have left them, you know, in the offseason. What I want to talk about, Sean, is, you know, is – a bigger story than Terrell Pryor, a bigger story than Golden Tate. I want to talk about the rapid transit systems in the Bay Area.
Otherwise known as BART, correct?
Otherwise known as BART. So, in case you haven't heard, BART has this brand new design, this brand new art, look in their trains that look eerily similar, Sean Wally, to that of the Sounder that brings Seattle Seahawks fans to and from CenturyLink Field in Seattle. I mean, it is almost to a T. The fluorescent green along with the blue in the seats. I mean, it is incredible. And the San Francisco 49er fans in the Bay Area are at arms on this whole deal.
Well, Sean, I think this is a case of the bathroom wall, and anybody can go online and say something and start something, and I think that's what's happening here, because you're talking about whoever this gentleman is that started this idea. He's contacting the people at the BART system, and he wants them to change the colors of the seats, and those are Seahawk colors, and how atrocious can that be, and this is 49er land. yet you talk to rational 49er fans, and one of our favorite 49er listeners here on the double is a guy you know and have talked to, Americo Ayala.
Yes.
And he had basically the same sentiment to say, is like, this is ridiculous, you know? Let's not give people more reason to call the 49ers the 40 whiners. Quit the crying and let's, you know, do something good with being a fan and not care about what color seats are, because they have nothing to do with any team in any sport.
Now, you know, that's coming from a Seattle Seahawks fan, and you're talking about the colors of these seats. Of course, let me correct myself, because this isn't due until 2017. So the design that came out was actually a design that came out in the San Francisco Chronicle. And so, I mean, it hasn't actually happened just yet. But, oh, my goodness, I can only imagine in Seattle if that the rust and gold actually kind of the red and gold actually came out in, you know, the rapid transit system up there. To where, I mean, Seattle would be, you know, furious about something like this. So it isn't something that's small. It's actually big, especially when you got your butt kicked by the team that, you know, in your division, that and that team actually went on to win the Super Bowl. But, you know, there are also rumors that the person that actually made that design, Sean, is, you know, came down from the Seattle area and was once with up in Puget Sound, that actually designed the, you know, the same transit system up there and bringing it down to San Francisco. Is that true?
That's what I read as well, that the guy that is now in charge of BART and helped design the new trains that'll be out in 2017 was paid to come down from Seattle and take over the BART system. So there are conspiracy theories out there for you conspiracy theorists, especially here on BBS Radio. That might be a great show topic. And, you know, I mean, come on, Sean, you're talking about the Pacific Northwest and that red and puke rustic gold color, whatever you want to call it. You know better than anybody that the Pacific Northwest is known for its color and its art. And there's nobody in their right mind that would pick those colors, regardless of whether they were a Seahawk fan or not.
Well, there's over a couple of million people down here in Northern California that would beg to differ on how ugly those colors are. But, yeah, you know, I happen to agree. But at the same time, I mean, you're talking about a rival that has been built over the past few years, and I look forward to actually seeing this rival moving forward. Man, you're talking about 49er fans that have bought billboards up, you know, in the Seattle area to actually show, you know, their quest for six, and and vice versa. You know, it seems like the pranks are just getting better and better between the two franchises. So I don't put it, you know, past Seattle for doing something like this. I don't think that it's a little obscure and outlandish that something like this would happen. I, you know, tend to think that this is just the tip of the iceberg. But, man, you know, it is fun. It makes for fun entertainment.
So coming up tomorrow in San Diego, their colors of their transit system will be silver and black, correct?
You know, hey, you know, as far as the Raider Nation is concerned, it doesn't matter. And I was talking with somebody about this today. Oakland could move to Minnesota for all we care. And guess what? It would hurt just a little bit, but we would still root on the silver and black no matter where they were at. So it doesn't matter if they're in Oakland or L.A. or San Diego or Portland or Minnesota. We bleed silver and black because we're a world-renowned organization and franchise. It doesn't matter where they're at. So, you know, with that being said, that's what signifies a great franchise, your fan base and how far it stretches. And I can tell you between the two, between Seattle and San Francisco, and then you throw in Oakland, it does not compare to what the Raiders are around the world. So, you know, I love the fact that Seattle and San Francisco are going tit for tat with this, because you're talking about apples and oranges when you're dealing with the Raiders and the Raider Nation.
And how does that relate to train car seat colors?
Yeah, you know, just another trick in the hat. Just another trick in the hat, and we'll see what happens. Because you know that San Francisco is going to retaliate in some way, shape, or form. It's not going to be a great trick, and I didn't say it was going to be a great one, but you know that something's coming down the pike, and up in the Pacific Northwest, you guys need to brace yourselves.
for another billboard in Fife.
Exactly.
All right, the NBA playoffs. We have a final in Oklahoma City. Snicker, snicker, smile, smile. If you're a former Seattle Supersonic fan, the Memphis Grizzlies 111, the OKC Thunder 105 in overtime.
Memphis, you know, after losing their first game, and wow, it was amazing because the Grizzlies were losing in game one by as much as, I believe, 24 points at the half, came back and made a game of it at the end of the game, the first game, and, of course, come out here with a little bit of confidence, a little bit of resilience, and pull off the victory, Sean Wally. So that is great for the city of Memphis, going back tied 1-1.
And that's really the key in these playoffs, especially in the NBA, is you win a game on the other team's home court and you control your own destiny. Take it back to your place, take care of business, and you're going to win the series.
Yeah, you take one away from, you know, the opposing team's court, and then you gain home court advantage. You know, that's why I thought it was so funny that all year the Indiana Pacers were talking about winning home court advantage. We want home court advantage throughout the playoffs. Well, guess what? If you get home court advantage throughout the playoffs, that's a good thing. But if you can't make it out of the first round, that's a bad thing. And right now, the Indiana Pacers are down 0-1 with home court advantage. And now that home court advantage has shifted to the Atlanta Hawks. They, Sean Wally, have to figure out what is going on with their franchise. And if they don't figure it out fast, they're not going to get a chance to see the Miami Heat. They're going to be going fishing. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, we put the Indiana Pacers on this pedestal for the whole year because, you know, everybody wants to see King James go down. Everybody wants to see the Miami Heat go down. But, you know, Indiana did all of this talking. And, of course, there's still six games remaining. So, you know, it's a little bit premature on my part. But with those six games remaining, it does not look good for the Pacers in losing that home court advantage.
Definitely doesn't. Indiana was supposedly going to be the team that could challenge the Heat, and now their backs may be against the wall.
It just seems like they, you know, they haven't been able to put it together. You know, for the second half of the season, for whatever reason, it just seems like the pressures have mounted for them, and you know, you could see it as they play. They're very tight. They're very stiff. And, you know, it's looking bad. It's looking real bad for the Pacers.
And, Sean, the other game of interest in the NBA tonight, the Clippers and the Warriors in L.A. It is not looking good in the first half. If you're a Golden State Warrior fan, the Clippers in command.
Yeah, you know, with the Warriors, you know, this is definitely disheartening for me. And of course, the Clippers are with a commanding lead, 48-29, with about 8 minutes left in the second quarter. You know, optimism arose, you know, with, you know, the addition of Andrew Bogut actually being healthy most of the year. But, you know, going into the latter part of the season this year, David Lee picked up some injury. And, of course, Bogut going down in the last game of the season. You know, when you don't have a solid post player, and, of course, Jermaine O'Neal is doing his best as far as trying to find that fountain of youth, it seems like it's just not meant to be for the Golden State Warriors. And, of course, being down 20 right now, and of course, they're up 1-0 in this series, you don't want to give the Clippers that added fuel going into Oakland that they can actually run you over. And being up 20 points right now isn't boding well for the Golden State Warriors.
Moving to the current games in Major League Baseball of note, we've got a couple of tilts in the American League West here tonight. In Oakland, the Texas Rangers invading O.co, and right now in the fourth, it's Oakland 3, Texas 2.
You know, last week on this show, we were talking about the top two teams in the West, one being the Oakland A's and the other one was possibly the Seattle Mariners. And oh, what a difference 6 days makes, Sean Wally, up there in the Pacific Northwest. Now you're looking at a Seattle Mariners team that is 6 games out of first place and are fading fast, losing 5 games in a row. I believe it's 6. Now in the bottom of the fifth, down 2-0 against Seattle. What in the world is going on up there at Safeco Field?
We don't have enough time to get into that here tonight as we're keeping our engineer, board op, Don Newsom, late tonight. And much thanks to Don to sticking it out for us. And you look at the score right now, it's 2-0 in favor of the Astros. The Astros, of all people, have scored 2 runs on King Felix. The one guy you can count on to where you should, if you're the Mariners, be able to get a victory.
Yeah, you know,
you're down 2-0.
You know, and that's the sad thing is right now that's all that Seattle has to hang their hat on is King Felix. Now, granted, they have Robbie Cano and they paid a lot of money. They have paid a boatload of money to Robbie Cano. But there is more to a franchise than just paying an athlete this, you know, this wheelbarrow full of money. And the Oakland A's have a blueprint as far as year in and year out and staying competitive and paying a minimum for their players. And this is something that, you know, they even made a movie about and I think needs to be reckoned with because, you know, you look at the Oakland A's farm clubs, you know, all the way down to single A ball play, they have a tool to reload in case ball players get injured. And, you know, I get so excited with the Oakland A's because, you know, I open up and I look at the line and I think, man, who is this player? Where did this player come from? How old is he? And when did we get him? You have to have a strong farm club system and actually in actuality to be competitive in Major League Baseball. And the Oakland A's have that hands down above any Major League Baseball team in the majors. A strong, strong farm club.
Well, Sean, you look at the Mariners this last week. They went 1-6 on their 7-game road trip that took them to Texas and down to Miami, a stadium that you saw from afar back in January, and it looks amazing on television. And the trouble with the Mariners, yeah, it's a good thing, but it's also a hindrance. They're so close. They really are. They're one hit away. They're one Brad Miller bobbled grounder in Texas away from winning another game there. They lost 2 games on walk-offs in the last week. So it's not like they're getting blown out 17-2. Yesterday in Miami, in the getaway game, the day game, they were up most of the game. And then in the, I believe, the eighth inning, the Marlins took the lead 3-2. Ninth inning, Corey Hart hits a double. Tying runs on second, pinch runner. They have first and third after it all shakes down. Only one out. You should be able to get that guy from third in. Make the right baseball play, get the run in, tie the game, and see another inning. Live another day. Yet, instead, the young hitters strike out not once but twice to end the game.
And, you know, you hit it right on the head there, Sean Wally. The biggest key is to develop depth. And that's just what I mentioned just a second ago, is having a strong farm system, having enough depth to where you don't have to wear your players out, even at the beginning of the season. I can remember back in 2001 with the Seattle Mariners, and it used to bug me. I would think, man, why in the world would you pull Edgar Martinez away from playing third and put in a Mike Blowers to play third and interchange these players in and out, you know, when they could play the whole season? Well, you know, these players need to rest. And if you look at the Oakland A's and you look at their lineups, they always interchange their players. And they interchange their players, even at this part of the season, with great fill-in baseball players. Seattle is not there yet. They're not close to being there yet. They can field a great field of nine right now, but they don't have the players to actually fill in when one of their other baseball players needs a rest. And until Seattle can get to that point in developing depth for their franchise, it's going to continue to be a roller coaster. They're going to continue to see ups. They're going to see downs. And it's just going to be tough for Pacific Northwest fans.
Well, things are going to improve. At least they should on paper. And here's why. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Sean Boyd, but 3/5 of the penciled in preseason Seattle Mariners starting rotation has been injured. They're starting to get those guys back in the next week or two, hopefully by beginning to middle of May. And one of those guys is a guy that was in the running for the Cy Young Award last year, Hisashi Iwakuma. And anybody down in the 916 that wants something to do on a sunny, warm evening on a Tuesday night, get to the Rivercats game tomorrow night, because Iwakuma is making a rehab start for the Tacoma Rainiers, the AAA affiliate of the Mariners, down in your neck of the woods at the Sacramento Rivercats Tacoma Rainiers game. And it's your chance to get a look at a potential Cy Young Award winner and see what kind of stuff he really has.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hisashi Iwakuma is, a perennial pitcher. And, of course, injuries are these types of things happen with franchises. And so, yeah, if you get a chance, definitely get out and to Raley Field and watch Hisashi Iwakuma pitch, because, he's one of the fine pitchers in the majors. And I think that's something that would definitely benefit Seattle, is to have, at least two solid pitchers. And of course, as we speak, the Seattle Mariners tied the game in the bottom of the fifth, and it's 2-2. So, I just think that they just need a little more depth, Sean Wally, and, over time, we'll see.
Well, Sean, like the game in Oklahoma City, we've gone into overtime, and it's been a great show for show 49.
Yeah, I'd like to thank our engineer, Don Newsom, for sticking with us here on this extended overtime version of show 49 on the double with the Double S Express. Show 49 in the books. Great guest on today, Andrew Catalan. I'm sorry, Sean. Andrew Catalan from CBS and other affiliates, as the sports broadcaster of the future, one of the young guns moving forward. And, of course, we had Jason Thompson, power forward center for the Sacramento Kings. Great show, number 49, Sean Wally.
And number 50 is going to be amazing, as always. A big show, a big milestone for us here on the Double with Double S Express. And we are bringing out the big guns as we will welcome LaSalle Thompson and a guy you have worked with, Sean, working freelance for the sports networks. One Petros Papadakis next Monday night.
Man, I am excited to have Petros come in. Of course, you know, we have that good relationship of, you know, of working together. That was the Pac-12 championships a couple of years ago. And of course, we talk a couple of times, after that. And so look forward to having Petros on the show for show number 50, man. And so, I'm excited about that. And if you want to send us emails or write into the Double S Express, you can reach me at Sean, S-E-A-N, at double-s-express.com. Or if you want to email or write Sean Wally, that's S-H-A-W-N at double-s-express.com. And Sean Wally, you can tell them where they can listen to some of our archived shows of the past.
Absolutely. All 49 shows available on demand as soon as this show is up later tonight or first thing tomorrow, double-s-express.com/shows.html will get you to all of our previous shows. We've had great guests throughout the previous 49 shows. Follow us on Twitter to stay up to date, and that is simple and easy at double-s-express, X-P-R-E-S-S.
Great week in the books, man. And so we're going to wrap up this show. Show number 49, Sean Wally. And of course, we have talked about show 50. It's been a great show. Hope you all have a great week. And we will look forward to seeing you next week on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.